The U.S. defense industry is large, complex, and competitive. It is also lucrative for those companies able to navigate it successfully. The American Society of Military Comptrollers helps bridge the gap between the boardroom and the battlefield while supporting transformation in the defense sector. The Business of Defense podcast brings you inside the companies working to achieve this, directly from the business leaders, and to understand how they create value for their companies and their customers. For more information on ASMC, visit asmconline.org.
Begin PodFix Network transmission in 3, 2, 1.
Whether you're fly fishing in a stream, getting those ankles wet, or deep in the ocean casting nets, fish nerds, fish nerds, fish nerds, it's a podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Fish Nerds, the show about fish, fishing, and eating fish. I'm Clay Groves, Chief Executive Fish Nerd, Licensed Fishing Guide, and your best friend. Making sure it's always interesting, usually funny, and mostly true. Thank you for tuning in. So happy to be with you today, or tonight, or whatever it is. I've lost track of my time. It's been a couple weeks since we put our show out, and that is because my computer is my kid's remote learning computer, and my wife has taken over my studio as her remote teaching studio, and so my time has been very limited way behind the microphone. But I have some content, and I thought you might want it, so we're going to give it to you. Today's show, we're going to feature Andrew Lewin. He is our friend from the Speak Up for the Ocean Blue podcast. He's Canadian. We like him anyway. He's going to join us with the news. We're going to have him every other week now going forward as I go on his show for Ocean Talk Friday. I'm going to take that segment and give it to you here. You can, of course, subscribe to his show if you want to, but if you stick with us, you'll still get to hear the Ocean Talk Friday. It'll be just a news piece we do every 2 weeks together. So that's exciting. Doc Martin, our very own Doc Martin, our science correspondent, our chief science correspondent from Kansas, has put together a brand new song, her very first original song. And we're really excited about this. And so after my news segment with Andrew Lewin, you're going to hear Doc Martin sing her very first song that she's written. And I hope you like it. And that will be the entire show. We'll talk more in a bit. But in the meantime, let's get into the news with Andrew Lewin. Wrong button.
News, news, fish in the news. Everybody.
Hey, Clay. Welcome to the Speak Up for the Ocean Blue podcast on Ocean Talk Friday. Haven't done one. Oh, God, it's got to be at least 4 years. I'm so happy to have you on. Welcome to the show.
Hey, I'm super happy to be here. I'm glad I can bring back something worth talking about. I mean, for 4 years, you've had nothing to say on a Friday. And now, finally, you get to talk about something, and it's me.
I've been able to fill, like, 4 years of just garbage time, mm-hmm. and now you bring you on for the real talk.
The big guns. So you're like, you decided, I finally want listeners to my podcast. I better call Clay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. Today, we're going to be doing something that I haven't done in, I would say, 4 years, maybe. We're going to be doing Ocean Talk Friday. We're going to be talking about two different stories. I used to do this all the time every Friday when Nathan Johnson was helping me out with the show. He has since moved on to bigger and better things over at Oceana and is doing a great job out there. And then I did a little bit with Ed Hynos on, Dr. Ed Hynos on. We did some Ocean Talk Friday, but he's busy with his stuff. And so I've been looking for a great partner to do Ocean Talk Friday with for a while. And to be honest, Clay, I think you're the guy. I think we're gonna have some Ocean Talk Friday at least once a month, right?
At least, maybe more if you're into it. The pay is right, though. I can tell you that because of the offer you made me, it's very hard to refuse. You know, I
feel like free 99 goes a long way.
Yeah, well, I've been starting my new career as an Instagram model, and because it pays so well, I can afford to do this. And Andrew, I'm not kidding. The last 3 weeks, I've gotten over $700 of stuff sent to me to post for on Instagram. Like Under Armour sent me.
Well, is it because you are? Didn't you win like a pageant?
I am Mr. Mount Washington Valley. I live in the White Mountains, New Hampshire, and I was competing in a beauty pageant for Mr. Mount Washington Valley, raising money for charity. We raised $30,000 for local charities, and I won the contest.
How much?
$30,000. I didn't raise $30,000. I did $3,300, but the 11 guys competing collectively raised it. And for a small town, my town's tiny, that's a remarkable amount of money. But because I'm the prettiest, I got the crown.
Yeah. I love it. We should maybe just call you Mr. Universe right now. Yeah. Like, it's just, that's the next step, right?
Yeah. So dig this. Under Armour sent me $600 worth of clothes to wear for one Instagram post. For one Instagram post.
That on the pageant stuff?
No, just sent it to me, just random. They say, hey, Clay, we know you do Instagram. You got a podcast. Would you mind taking a picture with you wearing our stuff? I'm like, will you pay me money? They said, no, but we'll give you a whole bunch of cool stuff.
Just send you clothes.
And then I got, who was it? Last week, Earbuds Company sent me some brand new earbuds for the same thing. One post, $100 set of earbuds. And then I'm getting $250 sunglasses in the mail this week. To wear and post for on Instagram. I tell you.
How is this happening?
I've been turning these down for years, saying, I need to make money on my podcast. I don't need free stuff. Well, I've given up on the free money. That's not coming. Give me stuff.
For free stuff.
Yeah. And I'm going to throw it all in the ocean.
Oh, no. No. You can't do that. No. No. My God.
But it is ocean topic.
Before we go into
let's
the
get
show.
Into it.
And let's be honest, you've been on the podcast before where you talked about, you know, seafood choices. You've done talks on responsible seafood choices, responsible fishing. I think it's been amazing what you've been able to accomplish in your career of this kind of stuff and be able to do some guest lecturing at, was it the Virginia Aquarium?
I did. I got to speak on the Nat Geo 3D stage at the Virginia Aquarium about sustainable fishing.
Awesome.
They flew me down. They paid me, Andrew. They paid me to talk about, I did one night where I just talked about fish sex for an hour and they paid me money to do that. And they were shocked. They had no idea. I didn't tell them what I was talking about. You know, it was sustainable fishing, but I also talked, I think, you know, you can't be sustainable if you're not doing it. So we talked about fish sex and we had a good laugh.
I think, I love the rationale on that. I think that's awesome. Well, speaking of fishing, let's get into our first story. So we're going to cover two stories that both have to do with fish. One is more about, you know, looking at small scale artisanal fishing. And I think this is a really cool thing on it's on the Environmental Defense Fund website. And it's kind of an interesting story. It's basically why don't you describe what that actually is?
So artisanal fishing, it's just small scale fishing. It's basically you're hiring a guy. We're not directly hiring, but it's people going out with hook and line, catching one fish at a time. And theoretically, that is the most sustainable way you can get wild seafood on your plates. You know, they're not big trawling lines, they're not trot lines. It's just, I say guy, that's sexist, but a human going out and catching you a fish. And so very specific, very targeted fishing. I watched the video that you sent in to me to look at in advance. It didn't really get into what kinds of fish they were catching. It was more about, you know, the techniques they're fishing with. And I've always thought that like, it would be really hard to overfish an ocean if you were catching the fish one fish at a time, as opposed to catching them all at a time. And also you can eliminate bycatch if you're fishing with hook and line. You catch that one fish, it's the wrong fish, you can let it go. You know, but if you catch 3,000 wrong fish, even though you're throwing them back in the ocean, they're on your deck of your boat for a long time, they're not going to do as well. So
no, absolutely. And I think what was interesting about this video too is they talked about sort of how these artisanal fishermen and most of them were men there were, you know, fishing over the past few decades, how things have changed for them from an environmental perspective.
Well, they're very concerned about climate change.
Very concerned about climate change. In fact, that's what the video is mostly about, is how these fishers are adapting or are forced to adapt to climate change, where we're seeing them say that they have to do more effort, they have to go out further. And you saw the boats in the videos. I'll link to it in the show notes to this video, but you saw the boats, how big they are. You know, these are not boats that are built for offshore. These are,
I like that you said how big they are. I would have said how small they are, but you're more positive.
How small they are.
You're more positive thinker than I am.
That's probably. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like these boats, you know, they fit maybe 2 or 3 people and they're small. You can't even store that many fish on them, and they're really near shore boats. And so going out further, you know, for longer, becomes a big danger to these fishers, especially when the ocean weather changes and storms happen and so forth. It becomes a real danger for them, and they have to take more risks to try and get less fish. And that's just based on a climate change point of view. You know, and I think they also talked about how sea level rise, which is also a climate change effect or consequence of climate change, is causing coral reefs, seagrasses to and mangroves to be destroyed. You know, they're not getting the sunlight they need, and so they're seeing a loss of habitat, which is a lot of these habitats are basically the habitats that these fish live in. Without these habitats, the fish will not be there for very long. So they're seeing a lot of changes in this respect. And I think it kind of goes back to what I've been talking about on this podcast. And I was on your podcast recently talking about Seaspiracy and looking at, the fisheries and what the movie covers. A lot of the times, we don't think of small scale fisheries. We think overfishing is bad. Obviously it is with these big super trawlers and these large scale international fisheries. But when you're talking about near shore fisheries for artisanal fishermen who are literally just trying to feed their family and probably the people in their villages, it really paints a different picture of what we're looking at and saying, should we stop eating fish? Should everybody stop eating fish? Like, what are these guys going to do? What are these families going to do if they can't fish? It's what they've been doing for generations. And right now they're just concerned that there aren't as many fish because of climate change.
Yeah. And it's climate change. It's the limited time you can go out. There's the fishing regulations. There's a lot of, I'm not against regulations, by the way, but there's a lot of variables that play into when they can get out there and catch those fish. And I think it's really important to remember like how different artisanal fishing is from the big commercial fisheries and how much harder each individual fisher has to work to make a living. You know, they're not catching thousands of fish. They're catching handfuls of fish. So it may be dozens of fish, but it's not in the numbers you see in those big super trawlers. You know, they're not in the ocean. And that's the big trouble is those super trawlers are taking up all the big fish or all the good fishing. They're going out further and further. Climate change, as you said, was wrecking everything. And they were talking about, they might have weeks where there's one good day in a week where they can get out fishing. And they had to make that work for them. What I didn't get into, and I was really curious about, I didn't look it up or anything, is what do they earn? You know, like the price per pound for artisanal fish has to be multitudes higher than the giant super trawling fish. But there is a market that. It must be a market. People like you and I are going to be like, hell yeah, I'll go down the dock and buy your fish from you directly as opposed to going to the supermarket you won't. You're in the middle of Canada. I mean, there's no docks, in your neighborhood. But
well, Great Lakes. We have some fish in the Great Lakes. But you're right. It's very difficult to find that fisher, right? It's always like something that is, it's a prized possession. It's like, I know a guy. I know a fish from this guy.
So I live in the White Mountains of New Hampshire, right? We are an hour and 10 minutes from the Atlantic Ocean. And there's a farmer's market that happens 20 minutes down the street. And there are fishmongers who come to that farmer's market. And they are artisanal fishers. It's two guys on a small boat who go out every week. And then they bring on the weekends, they bring their fish around to farmer's markets. And I get their email every week and it has the four kinds of fish they caught this week and how they caught it and where they caught it. And so if you go down and buy those fish, you can be confident that what you're buying from them is going to be a better quality, a more sustainable, generally speaking, and a better fish than what you're getting when you go to the giant supermarket fish. At least it wasn't caught in a net of 10,000 other fishes. So we do have artisanal fishes in our area in New Hampshire. So.
Well, I mean, that's what it really comes down to. You know, we talk about, going back to your question of like, how much do you think people get per pound? Like in a developed country, such as like the US, Canada, and so forth, I mean, you can probably get a pretty penny for that. Like fishers, like if they sell individually, and now there's even more with community supported fisheries. Like I know in BC, they have this company called Skipper Auto, which you should probably be sponsored by the way, because they're killing it right now. But they will actually, you sign up, it's like a membership site. You sign up, you pick the fish that you want, and they go out and get it They bring it back. They don't, they're not paying, like, essentially what happens is like when fishers go out, they have to put in a certain amount of money, invest a certain amount of money to get, you know, able bodies to go out there, get their nets, buy their diesel and go out and they fish as basically as much as they can get, bring back, or what much as they're allowed to get, bring it back. And then they hope to make a profit based on what they get. Now, if they get less of what they're supposed to get, or the value of that fish is down for whatever that day is, then it's going to be a problem. They're not going to make money or they're going to lose money. But here with Skipper Auto, they're making money because they know exactly how many fish they're supposed to get or what type of seafood they're supposed to get. They know exactly how they're going to catch it. They bring it back. They know exactly how much fuel they need to spend it on, mm-hmm. how many people they need to do. So they can already figure out the profits based on what people are ordering. And then from a consumer standpoint, you know, you actually get a profile of who caught your fish. So you know exactly who caught your fish. You know exactly what fish you're catching, how it was caught. So that the transparency in that supply chain is minimalized and it's you just see everything. So it goes right to your door. Like I can order, I'm in Ontario, central Canada. I can order from BC. It'll be in my house like within like, I guess a day or two.
Have you done it?
Priority shipped.
Have you done it?
I haven't done it yet.
Well, get on it. Haven't report back.
I haven't pulled the trigger. I do know I have a friend, Emily D'Souza, who's a graduate student at the University of Guelph. She's done it before and she loves it. Mm-hmm. So I have to do it very, very shortly. I haven't had the time to sign up, but it's something I'm very, very interested in. But I think it's the future of fish, right? Like,
well, I doubt it. I'm not as hopeful as you are, Andrew, on that being the future. I think that's the future of woke purchasers, people who could shop at Whole Foods, people who could shop at your local, independent food shop. But I think the vast majority of, I don't know about Canadians, maybe you guys have a lot of money, but vast majority of Americans aren't going to change their behavior on artisanal fishing. It's going to be a niche market for, mm-hmm. and this is going to sound racist and sexist, but rich white people, maybe not sexist, sure. But it's the same people who can make the choice to become a vegan, will make the choice to just shop at Whole Foods, make the choice to buy the, it's really a rich white person game right now. That's how I see it.
Well, I agree with you in a certain perspective, although I think like with Whole Foods and some of those other supermarkets that say they know the supply chain and they know what seafood they're selling, there's some studies that say they don't necessarily know.
No, I agree with that. But the same audience, the same woke people who are shopping there are going to be, they do yoga. They wear, the same people. There's a certain socioeconomic line that allows us to afford to live our lives in that kind of woke manner. I think the vast majority of people, like if you're getting, there's still people getting their fish, they have to go to McDonald's and get their fish fillet, that's Alaskan pollock, which they claim, by the way, is sustainable.
I had somebody on the podcast that talked about how they work with McDonald's or a conglomerate that works with a number of like major corporations that order in bulk. And they say that they've mapped out the supply chain and that it's sustainable. I haven't looked into it.
Well, if you think about pollock too, pollock is they're in large numbers of fish. They're relatively small for a codfish and they're in huge, huge schools. So I always say like, go for the smaller version of that fish, go for the bait. And they're kind of in that. Kind of, it's sketchy because of the volume they go through, and that's where it gets lost. And I think on a global market, most countries, if they're eating fish, they're eating fish from the big, from big trawlers and big fishing lines. It's a harder thing. But, those of us who have the money and means, we should be doing what we can to eat better, smarter, I guess.
I agree. I think that's where it starts, right? Is the people that could and are able to make those choices But I think with the rest is really make those, like it's really up to the countries that are importing these fish to really force those choices to be made. But it will increase the price of seafood.
Absolutely.
The article that I did or the episode that I did on Monday, just two episodes ago, was all about the dolphin safe label or the tuna dolphin safe label. And they were saying that you shouldn't be buying canned tuna for 59 cents a can. That's not like those tuna are probably imported. You should be looking at like $4, $5, $6 a can. Mm-hmm. That's the tuna that's probably done properly. More bodies able to pay for fisheries observers, the fisheries observers at canneries on the boats and everything like that. So be prepared. If you're going to make sustainable choices, be prepared to buy you know, more expensive fish and seafood. And it's just like, you know, the farms now, right? If you want to eat healthier, better raised, more ethically raised beef, chicken, pork, whatever that might be prepared to pay more. Mm-hmm. And so I think it starts with the people who can, but mm-hmm. then when it comes down to the people who can't, where do we, you know, that's the big question of how that's done. That's probably beyond my scope and my expertise.
It's a problem I can't solve because it's really, right. you're dealing with a population of people who can't afford that kind of sustainability, you know, they don't even care about it. You know, it's not in their wheelhouse because they're worried about, you know, how am I going to pay my rent or my mortgage? How am I going to feed my kids? Hey, look, that fish is only $1.90 a pound. I'm buying it. I don't care what kind of fish it is. I'm going to buy it. So shocked though, Andrew, like, I was in the supermarket a couple of days ago and Atlantic cod, the fishery's been shut down here in New England for a long time. They sell Atlantic cod at the supermarket under a label that says sustainably caught, and it's $5.99 a pound. $5.99 a pound. That's free. And I asked where they got it. And they get it from Greenland or Iceland or somewhere in that region. I'm like, how is it so cheap? Like, it was so bizarre to me. I don't buy cod ever at a supermarket, but it's
right.
Just shocking to me. I'm like, how is that? And the only thing they had there was cod. They had cod. Everything they had there was like just name brand fish, cod, salmon, swordfish, you know, and I'm like, where's everything else? Like, I don't get it.
It's suspect to me for sure.
Yeah.
I worry about that because when you have something that cheap and just because they call it sustainably caught doesn't necessarily mean like they could be greenwashing. It has happened before.
Oh, sure.
You know, well, where they think it's coming from something that's sustainable.
And we talked about this the other day. There's no solid agreed upon definition for sustainability. Like it's, it doesn't exist. It all means something different. And I'll say it here, cause I'm not sure everyone listened to that Seaspiracy episode on the Fish Nerds podcast, but the maker of that film just describes sustainability as keeping enough fish around so you can keep killing them and growing more fish so you can kill them again. I think he had the perfect definition. So I think that was my only
the basic definition of sustainability.
That was my takeaway from his movie. He defined sustainability for us. So,
oh, I love it. I love it. This is what I love. As negative as you can be, as pessimistic, but you always find the good in that kind of in a movie like that.
I'm not really pessimistic. I always tell Andrew. No, not really. So here's the thing about fishing, Andrew, is fishing is an act of hope. It's a positive action, right? You wouldn't look at the ocean and then take a hook that's a quarter inch line, you know, quarter inch size, and put a little piece of sea worm on it and throw it in the ocean if you weren't hopeful, because you're hoping something's going to grab it. Odds are like astronomically against anything eating that thing at all, but you're like, I'm going for it. Look at the size of the ocean. I'm going to catch something on this tiny little thing. That's a hopeful action. I mean, there's nowhere bigger hope than that. So you can't.
You know what? I completely agree. I remember being in Louisiana on a ship, one of my first jobs, and we were out in the ocean, and literally in the middle of nowhere. We pull up, and all of a sudden, right beside us, we were stationary for a while. Right beside us was this massive, and I mean massive grouper, like
so
hundreds
big.
Of pounds of massive grouper
that could eat you.
basically, it could bite you, and you would be hurt. Yeah. But I remember we took one of the scientists decided, hey, I'm going to try and catch it, and took like a little line and a hook. And I remember that thing didn't even bother chewing it, but I'm like, you're not going to do it. Like the rod's going to break. It was like I don't even know what it was, like a 2-pound Tesla. Not even. It was just,
did he hook it?
It was going to snap right away. He didn't even go for it. I think he laughed at it. I really think he laughed at it. It was just like, no way. Are you kidding me? And they put some little piece of like squid on it or something like that. And I was just like, there's no way he's going to go.
It's possible.
It's possible. Yeah. But I mean, he wouldn't have caught it. There's no way that the line wasn't built for a group. No. Like that.
You probably didn't want to anyway.
Yeah, you don't want to. No. He was gonna like, I'd have to let go of the whole pole if I was gonna do that.
Yeah, scary stuff.
But anyway, so that was a really. I'm gonna link to that article. I think it's a really interesting article to show how these small scale artisanal fishers have to deal with all these problems like climate change, and it's something that we definitely have to be careful of, and have to provide support. Organizations like RARE and other organizations like Pew will go into these regions, work with the communities after they're invited, provide like technology support, provide knowledge, and work with them with their cultural ways and sort of their I guess their history and their like traditional ecological knowledge, and work to make sure that they're able to transform that fishery. And so it's really interesting in that aspect. So we're going to move on to the next article, which I thought was really interesting. It's about fish, and I thought you'd really like this. Fairy wrasses. Have you heard of them? Have you seen them? Do you like them?
I like wrasses. Fairy wrasses is a fish I haven't heard of. But they're beautiful, shockingly
they're
beautiful.
They're absolutely
fish.
Stunning.
Yeah,
they're like the Fruit Loops of fish.
Right, you know what that means?
In terms of their,
they all taste
in terms
the same
of their color.
Oh, yeah, there's Fruit Loops.
Oh, not the taste.
Fruit Loops are all one flavor. It doesn't matter what color they are. So I wonder if they all taste the same. My first thought was like, I bet they all taste exactly the same.
Well, they're not like they can be get pretty big in the wild. Mm-hmm. They're very popular. Some of these are very popular in the marine aquarium hobby. You know, you'll see a lot of fairy wrasses. They're usually in bigger aquariums. That's sort of where I discovered them when I was working at an aquarium, or when I was working for an aquarium store when I was younger, and we started to see these fairy wrasses come in. But they are absolutely beautiful. But the article that we're going to cover is from Science News, and it's all about how these flamboyant fish evolved an explosion of color as seas rose and fell. And this article goes like way back millions of years to look at how the cyclical sea level changes had over time, and how these fish were able to mix and then be isolated and then mix and then be isolated, and how their genetics changed over that time through the mixing and isolation. And something that I just think is amazing. And I'll just give a quick description for it. Essentially what would happen is they were found in the South Tropical Seas, Southwest Tropical Ocean, and they were around a bunch of archipelagos. So essentially, you know, those are basically very isolated areas. Probably one of the most, you know, looking at Indonesia, Thailand, Malaysia, and these types of areas. And so what would happen is, because it's so diverse in the first place, because of these, there's so many archipelagos, and there's just so geographically isolated at times, as the seas would sink down and would retreat, you would see part of those, like those areas, wouldn't have access to get to other places. So you'd have a population or different populations that would be isolated from each other, and then so they would mutate. And they would have genes that would mutate, and they would sort of adapt to, or the animals that were able to adapt to that specific area would do well. And then as the seas rose, you would have all these areas that would, all these fish that would be able to mix, because now all of a sudden they were connected. They'd have these water bridges that would go all over the place. And then there was the ice ages.
Well, he called it a species pump. He said, so they would, you know, so imagine you've got this body of water that gets divided by ice, right? So now you've got two species of fairy wrasse, and then they've got 10,000 years to diversify within these two populations, right? And they evolve very, very differently. And then that water recedes, and then that they pump together as it recedes, and they mix together, and all of a sudden an explosion of new species come out because of it, you know, And that's why they get that diversity. Right now, there's 60 species of fairy wrasse that they discovered.
Yeah.
But they're finding a new species at least one a year. And that's why this is interesting. It's that quick biodiversity of fairy wrasse. I had no idea there's a thing.
Well, I mean, I didn't know there were that many species of them. And I think having, you know, seeing this evolutionary process happen so quickly in consideration, like normally these things take, you know, 10, 20, 30 years down the road, maybe 100 years down the road, and you would see a new species pop up. Mm-hmm. But then you get all these different species within a couple of years or even 10 years, and you're like, holy cow, like there's more and more species. And they always have these mix of colors. And if you look on that, I'll put the article in the show notes again, but if you look at the article and the picture just in the first little bit, you just see how dynamic these colors are, from the deep purples to the yellows to the greens to the blues and all that kind of stuff, and it's just phenomenally gorgeous fish that you get to see, and they're quite active. They're schooling fish too, so they're found in a big pop, like big sizes and stuff.
Well, and Andrew, they do a mixed species school,
Yes.
So your school of fairy wrasse could have 10, 20 different species of fairy wrasse in it, and the females have to decide which are the right species to mate with. Because if you, I mean, it's really hard. Do you know how to define speciation? Andrew, it's a hard one. Like, how do we define species?
Well, I mean, it's usually two different individuals from the same species that can act, like, if they're from the same species, they can actually, you know, reproduce.
They can reproduce, and their young can also reproduce, right? So they wouldn't be making mules, they'd be making fairy wrasse. So they've got to figure out in this giant mixed school of fish that all are brightly fluorescent colored, who are their partners. And they do it, and they figure it out. But within that, you've got these quick evolution processes happening, these mutations happening within that group. So there's not a lot of hybridization going on. But it's kind of neat, like, because you would expect hybrids to be a thing. And that's not what they're talking about. They're not talking about hybrids.
No. Like, so completely new species that are able to reproduce, and where the hybrids usually aren't able to reproduce. And you hear, like, competition of reproduction, you know, within species with, like, different males of different various sizes, and they'll usually compete over a female and vice versa. Here you're almost competing with evolution.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, okay, first you have to find the right species, and then you have to be able to make sure that you can compete properly to have your genes go on to the next generation. I mean, that's like an extra level of competition that we don't normally see.
Talk
about in science.
Now, I was reading this, and I couldn't quite figure out how he could tell if they're only mating with the right species. Like he said, in order to reproduce, they would have to mate with the right species. But couldn't they get it wrong a whole bunch of times and just not have outcome?
Just not have offspring. I'm sure right. It happens.
You know, like, hey, you're looking good, Miss Rass, but I'm not the same kind of Rass as you. I don't care. It's Tuesday. It's been a long week. You know, doesn't matter to me tonight, you know?
I need to relax.
It's time. Let's go. And we do it. Yeah, we're done. So they don't discuss whether that happens or not. I find it shocking that that's not a thought process, because to me it seems like, of course, they're going to mate with the wrong species once in a while. You know,
you would think. Yeah. I mean, like, I'm sure there's sort of accidental mating, mm-hmm. You know, and just because of how many species are there and how many individuals are there, I just think it's just this topic is so interesting, and because of their bright color, they just make a good story, and how fast they evolve. I think it's just a fun story. And to be honest, like, I want to cover this story because I've been talking so much of Seaspiracy and fisheries, and I was getting a little tired of it. I'm going to continue with it next week, but I'm just like, I need a break.
Yeah.
And it was great to have a break with you to talk about some fun things, you know, and some cool science and some cool evolutionary perspective. So,
well,
and it's about fish.
It's fun. And, you know, of course, Andrew, I didn't introduce myself as a, I used to be a science teacher. So I love talking about science. I love dissecting the ideas of science, like questioning stuff, like asking the questions that aren't in the article. So all that's very fun for me. And so I appreciate you getting me on. I'll do this off as you want to, Andrew. Like, if you want to, you know, do this every 2 weeks, I'm in. I'm game.
I think we should. I think we should try and do some pretty cool things. I've seen some really fun articles that have to deal with sort of like the not only just the ecology and the conservation, but really just the interesting science points that I don't usually get to cover often. And it would be great to have you back on to do that kind of stuff. I think that would be, since with your science teaching background, you'll be able to communicate it probably better than I would.
Maybe not.
And, so we can riff off that.
But we can still
we can see where we could go.
But we can have a good time with it anyway. And we could even have, absolutely, you know, some weeks where you bring an article, I bring an article, or, and we can surprise each other with articles sometimes, you know, maybe, you know, we have a lot of fun with that.
And see how fast we can think on our feet.
Yeah. And this will, every time we do these, I will mix them into the Fish Nerds podcast as well as a swap cast so that our audiences can hybridize. Let's hybridize our audience. Yeah.
Let's hybridize.
We don't want separate species because we want them to grow.
No. You know? We want to grow our own podcast.
That's
right. We want to grow it together.
Yes,
just not make a new one.
We look different, but we taste the same. That's our new motto.
look
just like Fruit Loops.
Yeah. I love it. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll have you back on in a couple of weeks. We'll get some articles. We'll talk science. I'm excited about this. This is fun to do another Ocean Talk Friday, and I look forward to doing more with you. Actually, next time you're on, we'll have to talk about how we met, because I think it was a really interesting story.
I don't remember. I think we were swimming. Oh, I remember. Yeah, yeah, I have no idea.
We'll talk about it next time. All right, Andrew. For sure.
News, news, fish in the news. Everybody loves their fish in the news.
And again, you can check out Andrew Lewin's podcast, Speak Up for the Ocean Blue, anywhere you get your podcast. And you totally should subscribe to it if you want a podcast. I was a little more serious about conservation than the Fish Nerds. It is for you, and Andrew is a great guy and a good friend of the podcast, and so we look forward to working with him more often. Just kind of a little housekeeping here, if you're still with us, but thank you. Patreon subscribers, thank you so much for giving us money on Patreon, patreon.com/fishnerds. It is quite literally the only way the show exists right now is because of our Patreon people, and we really thank you for putting your money into the show. This winter, I have failed in a lot of ways. I have failed to send out prizes. I've offered people prizes for different contests. Mostly it was a monthly drawing on Patreon, and I've lost track of who won what. And so my failure as a one-man show here is really showing now, as I realize I've got prizes on my desk that I've not mailed out, and I don't know who gets them. So if you've won a prize, do me a solid. Send me an email, clay@fishnerds.com. Tell me what you won and when you won it and what for, and I will double check that and get those packages out to you as soon as I can. And again, I apologize. Sometimes I fall apart and things don't come together the way they should. It's really a one-person operation to Fish Nerds, and I've been doing it a long time. The other thing, news, and bigger than that, is we're coming up on our 300th episode here in just, gosh, about 5 weeks from now, which is big. 300 episodes. 7-8 years of podcasting now is quite a bit of podcasting. So I'm not sure what I want to do for our 300th show. I'd love your ideas. If you want to call in and leave a message for that show, you know, and tell us what the Fish Nerds mean to you or what anything you want about it, you can give us a call, 607-378-FISH, 607-378-FISH, and tell us anything you want about the 300th episode. It could be congratulations. It could be it's time to hang it up and quit. It could be here's some ideas for some new stuff. All that's really good stuff. If you don't want to call us, grab your phone and use the voice memo function and leave us a message that way and email it to clay@fishnerds.com. And the other thing I was thinking about doing is I'm kind of thinking that, sometimes, some weeks I lose my motivation to record. Not my motivation to make a good show for you, but I just don't. Sometimes you need people in your brain to help motivate you to go forward. And so I'm kind of thinking the Fish Nerds needs a regular co-host to join me every week here on the show. I have lots of correspondents who are great help. And one of them could be the next Fish Nerds co-host if they had time, but it looks like most don't have the time that it requires. It's quite a bit of requirement, at least an hour a week of recording and maybe another hour to help edit and do some post-production work. So a couple hours a week, maybe half an hour, 40 minutes of research. So if you're thinking, could I co-host the Fish Nerds podcast? The answer is maybe. If you're interested in doing that, email me, clay@fishnerds.com. There are some requirements. We do want to have good audio, so you will need a USB mic. If you need specific recommendations, email me. I'll let you know what works really, really well and what's affordable. You also need to be able to speak well. But I'm looking for diversity of ideas. So, like, I'm a fishing guide. I don't think I want another fishing guide as a co-host. If you're a biologist, great. Chef, wonderful. Artist, cool. Conservationist, awesome. Vegan, maybe. I don't know. But I wouldn't mind someone with differing opinions than I have. A female voice would be wonderful. Black voice would be great. But any other voice besides me is better than me. So if you want to be part of it, let us know. clay@fishnerds.com, and maybe I'll have you on as like a trial. I'll get you on for a co-host one night, and we'll see how it goes and figure it out from there. I don't have a process yet for picking it. And you will make as much money as I do on the podcast, which is absolutely nothing. That's it. You don't get a dime, but that's how it goes. All right. Before I talk too much about nothing, why don't we jump right into Doc Martin's brand new song. It's called Wet Roots. And this is Doc Martin's very first original song. She usually does parodies for us, and I'm so thrilled that she gave us this song for you. Here is Wet Roots, Doc Martin, here on the Fish Nerds.
This is my first original song. All right.
All living things are connected. Our evolutionary history is affected by the things that came before. Our roots run deeper evermore. But how do we know the things belong? Plant or animal, right from wrong? Morphology and molecular assays tell us where things fit into the vast array of all the things on our planet, from the coveted to the taken for granted. There is a saying, I think it's rich. We are all just highly derived fish, though fish, of course, are derived too from archaea, and so are you. Taxonomy is a technical field, as such, most folks don't think about it too much. I find it beautiful and serene, all this life from a small thing called a gene. I'd like to invite you to take a peek about this complex organizing mistake. While there are numerous applications, I'd like to use fish to explore these relations. Be one that is Latin and Greek, and it will be an adventure. There should not be dread. Don't worry if your pronunciation's right. You don't have to read this aloud and recite. Just enjoy the ride ahead and fill our hearts and minds instead. Different little habitats is where you'll find the fishes at. Location so unique, cause fish to thrive or to be weak. But the happy fish survive, producing offspring that will thrive, while all the weak fish swim away to find a better place to stay. These environmental pressures are the natural selection measures that cause differentiation, leading to a basic speciation. Movement is a common solution, influencing results in fish diversity. Is it fishes or is it fish? Well, both are right, but if you wish to meet a single one that squirms, then a fish will be the proper term. But if the fish has company, if she meets up with two or three friends of the exact same kind, call this a group of fish you find. What if different kinds join her? Then it's fishes, what a stir. Just knows one trick that's easy. Fishes reflects diversity. This diversity is categorized by how a fish lives, look, and survives. Linnaeus was the scientist who made this classification list. Taxonomy is how things are related to each other and designated. This naming system names all living things, from creatures small to huge trees with rings. Fishes are in the eukaryote domain. The nucleus has a nuclear membrane. Kingdom animalia next to engage. Embryonic development has a blastula stage. After this point, things get befuddled. Groups, infraclades make things muddled. In general terms, phylum chordata is next. Nerve cord, pair limb, circulatory complex. Phylum chordata, there are roughly eight classes, four of which include fishes like grasses. The first class doesn't include swallows, because superclass like Gnatha, these fishes are jawless. Class makes any order, mix uniformities. This complex taxonomy requires some expertise. Family mix in a day, our hagfish informally. Mix means slimy feet deep in the sea. Have tiny eggs, no jaw or vertebrae. Tube shaped like eels, marbles on display. This group gave scientists quite the mystery. This bizarre fish has a wildlife history. Petromyzon to the olive brain. Petromyzon to farmers, petromyzon to tame. Petro means stone, myzon means to suck, because on rocks you find mating adult stuff. This fish looks eel-like too, but don't let appearances fool you. Not all tube-like fish are eels, like not all cars are Oldsmobiles. Many live prey, migrate from saltwater to fresh, where they meet their mates and make their nests. Gametes of many adult live prey are not parasitic and feed in a filtering way. However parasitic, leprous spend their years sucking the blood from unwitting volunteers. This might closely they live deep in marine waters for where they live. They look like they ought to. Chimera fins are underwater wings. Their long tails are like a string, but those tails are whip-like and jointed. Their noses are quite a look, fleshy and pointed. Chimera are covered in scales, a venomous dorsal spine that impales. Their big eyes can see in the dark. These fish are related to sharks.
Fantastic. Thanks, Doc Martin. And so that's it. You've listened to a bunch of Fish Nerds when you should have been fishing. Big thanks to Wally Pleasant for writing our theme music. Thank you to Diana's Bath Salts for making our Fish in the News music. Huge thanks to Andrew Lewin from Speak Up for Blue, Speak Up for Ocean Blue podcast. And Doc Martin, you know, you've been making the podcast almost as long as I have. Thank you so much for original music. The fact that you're still with us is remarkable, and we really do appreciate you. So until next time, follow the code of the Fish Nerds, spawn early and often, never trust a free lunch with strings attached, and swim against the current every chance you get. And that's the end.
Whether you're fly fishing in a stream, getting those ankles wet, or deep in the ocean casting nets, Fish Nerds, Fish Nerds, Fish Nerds. It's a podcast.
Just for the halibut.
Fried in a basket or broiled in a pan. Eat it raw like you're in Siam. Fish Nerds. Fish Nerds. Fish Nerds. It's a podcast.